Leslie did not exist before this episode. What they're about to describe is happening across Northwest as you listen. This is their story. Healthcare training in Stretford and Urmston has been strangled by Treasury limits that treat NHS investment as a cost, rather than the pathway that connects willing workers to understaffed wards. Training centres stand empty while unemployment persists and hospital vacancies multiply. The resources to solve both problems locked away by spending caps that mistake political choices for economic laws.
I walk Buster along the Bridgewater Canal every morning at 6:30, before the joggers and the cyclists claim the towpath. He's a retired racing greyhound, all ribs and gentle eyes, and he moves through the world like he's got nowhere urgent to be. I rescued him 3 years ago, right around the time I decided I wanted to train as a mental health nurse. My mum spent 23 years cleaning the wards at Trafford General. She'd come home with stories about the nurses who stayed late to sit with frightened patients, who remembered everyone's names, who somehow made the worst days bearable. The NHS needs more like them, she'd say, folding her uniform for the next shift. She wasn't wrong. I studied biology at Manchester Metropolitan, and by my second year, I knew exactly what I wanted to contribute. Mental health nursing felt like the place where science met compassion, where you could actually make someone's day better with the right conversation and the right clinical knowledge. In 2022, I applied to Health Education England Northwest for mental health nursing training. I spent weeks on that application, researched every programme, wrote essays about why mental health mattered, why I wanted to work with people at their most vulnerable moments. I passed the initial screening, I passed the interview. Then I got a letter that made no sense. We regret to inform you that while your application meets our requirements, we have reached capacity for this funding cycle. There were 127 funded places available across the region, and demand exceeded supply. 127 places across the entire Northwest for mental health nursing, in a region where you can wait 6 months for a counselling appointment, where emergency departments see mental health crises every single day, where the waiting lists grow longer while the training places stay the same. But I accepted it. It sounded reasonable. Funding was limited. These things happened. I tried again in 2023. This time I knew what to expect, prepared even better answers, practiced the scenarios until I could recite the principles of therapeutic communication in my sleep. I passed everything. Every assessment, every interview stage, every competency check. Then NHS England sent me a different letter. Due to Treasury spending limits, we can only fund 89 places this year, down from the previous allocation. 89 places. In a year when mental health services were more stretched than ever. But again, I nodded along. The budget has been cut, the programme coordinator told me over the phone. We cannot afford to run the full cohort. It sounded official. It sounded final. Everyone accepted it. I approached Manchester NHS Foundation Trust directly about apprenticeship routes. Maybe I could train while working, bypass the bottleneck, prove myself on the job. The training manager was sympathetic but clear. Our training budget has been cut by 15%. We're struggling to maintain the programmes we already have. Same story, different building, no money, budget constraints. The cupboard was bare. That afternoon, I drove to Trafford General Hospital to visit my mum after her shift. She wasn't ready yet, so I wandered around the grounds, past the main building toward the old nurse training centre. I'd heard about it, but never seen it. What I found made no sense. The training centre was completely empty. 40 training beds with pristine mattresses, IV stands lined up like soldiers, simulation equipment still wrapped in plastic like Christmas presents no one had opened, lecture halls with chairs stacked in perfect rows, whiteboards clean and waiting, projectors mounted and ready. The building hummed with electricity. The heating was on. Everything worked. Everything waited. A security guard found me staring through the windows. "Been like this for 2 years," he said. "Mothballed due to funding constraints. Shame, really. Beautiful facility. Could train hundreds." He walked away, keys jangling, like he'd said nothing strange at all. That same week, I met my neighbour James at the canal. He was walking his kids to school, looking tired in the way people do when they've been unemployed for 8 months. He'd lost his care assistant job when the private company restructured, had all the interpersonal skills you'd want in healthcare, exactly the kind of person who could have filled one of those training places. But James couldn't get onto any programme either. No funding, no spaces, no opportunity. I stood there watching Buster sniff at the water's edge, trying to make sense of what I'd learned. The people existed. James existed. I existed. Dozens of others I'd met at interviews existed, all of us qualified, all of us motivated, all of us ready to start yesterday. The building existed, equipped and waiting. The patients existed, waiting 6 months for appointments that trained nurses could provide. The need existed in every ward, every clinic, every community mental health team crying out for staff. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound, that prints the notes I carry in my wallet, that mints the coins Buster sometimes finds on our walks, told me it could not find enough of them to connect willing workers to needed work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people were there, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities existed, whether the patients needed care. The answer to all of those was yes. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. Treasury spending limits are not laws of physics. They are decisions made by people who had alternatives. They could have funded 127 places. They could have funded 200. They could have reopened that training centre and filled every bed with someone like me, someone like James, someone ready to learn and serve and heal. I still walk Buster every morning. I still want to train as a mental health nurse. I still see the empty building when I visit my mum. Still meet neighbours who want exactly the work that remains undone. But I hear the excuses differently now. When someone says there is no money, I hear we chose not to spend the money. When they say the budget has been cut, I hear we decided the budget should be smaller. When they say we cannot afford it, I hear we chose not to afford it. This is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. We just chose to keep it locked.
What Leslie experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound to public investment. It's like refusing to water a garden because some drops might miss the plants, then pointing to the withered flowers as proof that gardening doesn't work. Historically, tobacco companies used impossible expectations to delay health regulations for decades. They demanded absolute proof that smoking caused cancer, knowing that absolute proof is impossible in complex systems. Any study that showed correlation rather than causation became grounds for inaction. The standard was impossibly high, deliberately so. In Leslie's story, NHS England applied the same logic. They demanded certainty that every training pound would produce a perfect nurse in exactly the right specialty at precisely the right time. Any possibility of someone changing career paths or moving regions became grounds for cutting places. Meanwhile, they never applied this standard to tax cuts for corporations or emergency bank bailouts, where waste and uncertainty are accepted as normal. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Stretford and Urmston, those resources were sitting idle. The NHS is a bottomless pit objection sets an impossible standard where no amount of evidence of need is ever sufficient. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Stretford and Urmston ranks 226 out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 740 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Total grants received amount to £15.1 million, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.